अपि ऑल्दो विदुरवत एज इफ फार अवे न नेवर एव सर्टनली अभिभवितुम टू बी ओवरकम शक्य एबल वेना किंग वेना अरणी द वुड दैट प्रोड्यूसेस फायर उत्थित बींग बॉर्न ऑफ अनल फायर ट्रांसलेशन किंग पृथु वॉज बॉर्न ऑफ द डेड बॉडी ऑफ किंग वेना एज फायर इज प्रोड्यूस फ्रॉम अरणी वुड Thus, King Prithu will always remain just like fire, and his enemies will not be able to approach him. Indeed, he will be unbearable to his enemies. For although staying very near him, they will never be able to approach him, but will have to remain as if far away. No one will be able to overcome the strength of King Prithu. Purport. Arani wood is a kind of fuel used to ignite fire by friction. At the time of performing sacrifices, one can ignite a fire from Arani wood. Although born of his dead father, King Prithu would still remain just like fire. Just as fire is not easily approached, King Prithu would be unapproachable by his enemies. Even though they would appear to be very near him. Durasado durvishah asannopi viduravat naivabhi bhavitum shakyo venaranyutitho nalaha. In this passage of Srimad Bhagavatam, story of Maharaj Prithu is described by Shukadeva Goswami. Brief background, because many of your Sunday attendants give a little background, that King Vena was a very powerful king, but he was not a pious king. He was an impious person. So he was disturbing, exploiting, torturing his citizens. King is supposed to be powerful, but at the same time his power is supposed to be used to protect innocent, to dispense justice. But instead King Vena was using his power to exploit and torture his citizens. In spite of many warnings, King Vena did not reform. So Brahmins cursed him to death. The Brahmins of that age were very powerful. They were not Bhojanani Brahmins who did nice meals, but they were performing austerities. And although they did not have army to enforce their will or to make sure things happen as they desire, but because of their austerities, their renunciation and their commitment to dharma, they were powerful enough that their words would come true. So they cursed King Vena. They had commitment to the principles. That just reminds me of a story. And who was that? When Shankaracharya was touring, whom he met, who was lying on the fire somewhere in north. Anyway, Adi Shankaracharya was touring the world, I forgot the name of that, who was a very renowned Brahmin, and he could not, that time Buddhism was prevalent in India, and they were literally pushing out the Vedic Sanatana Dharma from the society. So this person, I forgot his name, just slipped my mind, he was very distressed, but those days there was intellectual atmosphere in the country and people would debate. And in the debate, if you defeat opponent, he would accept you as his master. It was a normal thing. There was no need to have army to enforce your will. So So this person wanted to defeat Buddhists. So he went to a Buddhist leader or a guru and became his follower and learned from him all the Buddhist logic and arguments. So he could defeat him, defeat Buddhists with his intention. He misled that person. So after learning that, he came out and then he started preaching or started arguing with Buddhist leaders and defeating them. But then he held that feeling that I cheated this person, that I went to him under a disguise of being student, but my intention was to actually defeat him or to destroy him. So he went to the Purvamimamsa Shastra. So what could be the punishment for such a person? So it says somewhere in Shastra that if you do such a treachery with your guru, you should burn yourself alive. So he put himself on a pile of wood and asked, and fire was put, and he was alive. He wanted to because he thought I must pay back for my sinful act of learning. So after Shankaracharya came, he heard that, I forgot his name, not Vachaspati, anyway, he met him and then he instructed him from the top of that, you know, pile of wood on which he was lying about different arguments against Buddhistic ideology. So anyway, the point was, this is Kali Yuga, you know, a few thousand years back. So the Brahmins said that commitment to their religion principles, and for that they would not mind living austere simple life. Their knowledge, their principles are not for sale. They can't be purchased by the king, by his money or by his army. That was a Brahmin. Brahmin means he had that independent commitment to the values, principles, and for that he was willing to sacrifice his comforts, personal comforts, and take great risks. Because of such commitment and austerity, they became very powerful. So when they would say something, it would come true. Now, just because somebody is born in a Brahmin family, he will not get such power. It will come by performance of austerities, performance of, you know, certain principles, keeping some principles. So anyway, the king Vena was not performing his duties properly, so the Brahmins went and requested him, but then he was not willing to reform, so they cursed him and he died. Which was the only way left for the Brahmins to save the society. But then they found that it became worse. Although King Vena was torturous, cruel king, at least he was very powerful. And because he was very powerful, other rogues and cruel people would not exploit citizens. He had made sure nobody would do that. He himself was doing exploitation and torture, but others were under control. But when he died, there was nobody to control these fellows. So all the rogues and dacoits, they got a free hand and they started exploiting the society. So instead of one Vena exploiting, you know, it became worse. Like our democracy, sometimes could be explained. And if there's a bad king, he'll exploit how much he can exploit. But if there's a whole system where from the leader of the panchayat, leader of the gram panchayat, up to the prime minister, everybody starts exploiting, it becomes very unbearable. So powerful king, even if he's bad, as long as he controls others, the exploitation and torture of society is very less. So to the great horror of the Brahmins, they found that death of Vena became worse than living Vena. Sometimes it happens, many times it happens. The solution becomes worse than the problem. So they felt that they created a big problem for the society by killing Vena. So then they churned, I think, arms or legs or something of King Vena. And from there, Maharaj Prithu was born. He was born out of dead father. Although born out of dead father, it says here, eh? He was born out of a dead person. He was not born out of a living person. But although he was born out of a dead person, he was not dead. He was alive like fire. This is what this particular verse is saying. He was like a fire that his enemies could not approach him. These are all the prayers offered to him after his at the time of his coronation by different devatas who came. And this particular prayer is offered by Prabhupada's professional reciters. Many different expert reciters who could recite olden days and even now, directly or indirectly. The powerful person has many, what you call, sycophants, many people who glorify them, many people who, generally king would get up and he would be woken up by the glory, hearing his own glories. It used to happen. Even the landlords and nawabs, they had their, you know, professional reciters. That was the system in court of the king. There would be people who would glorify his qualities, his real, unreal, imaginary, all qualities were glorified. And now also you can see many times political leaders, they have their bunch of followers who see every good quality in them and every bad quality in their opponents. You know, we see how sometimes they equate these leaders to great personalities of the past. So these reciters came and they started glorifying, they wanted to glorify Lord Maharaj Prithu. But Prithu felt very embarrassed. He felt very embarrassed because this is the quality of Krishna, humility. Utkrishtvapi amanitvam kathita mana shunyata. Rupa Goswami defines what is humility. Utkrishtvate, one who is utkrishta, one who is outstanding. Yes, that's the proper word, outstanding. Thank you. Outstanding person. He's got good, great qualities. But he's denying those qualities. If a great, intelligent person like Einstein says, I'm ignorant, I'm fool, then that's humility. If I am say I'm a fool, that's not humility. That's honesty. So humility means when you have a quality and you deny. And that's the quality of Krishna. Krishna, Rupa Goswami says, is a very humble person by nature. That's what Rupa Goswami describes him. And Krishna's quality, Krishna is a gun, Vaishnava Sharire. And qualities of Krishna, they manifest in the body of a Vaishnava. 26 qualities, specially listed by Rupa Goswami and also by Kaviraj Goswami. One of them is Dainyata, humility. It is not that this quality of humility is exhibited artificially or by some as a means to show. This natural feeling the devotee develops in his heart. Although all the great qualities, Rupa Goswami says, are decorating like ornaments in the body of a Vaishnava, he has innermost feeling of being unaccomplished or having no qualities. Kaviraj Goswami is one of the examples. In his writings, you can see such a wonderful book he has written, Chaitanya Charitamrita. If you read that book from one end to another end, even without knowing anything, you can develop love for Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, thought the greatest scholar of his time, he said only one book he can have, he has to choose, and that is Chaitanya Charitamrita. There is probably no book parallel on Mahaprabhu's life. But he is saying, I am like worm in a stool. If you read the book, it's quoted from so many different scriptures, all the different Upanishads, Vedas, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, different great Vaishnava scholars like Bilumangal Thakur, Ramananda Rai. You know, it's probably commentary on all different great acharyas who wrote different beautiful verses. But he says that he is lower than a worm in the stool. It is not that he is trying to show everybody that he is very humble. That's the innermost feeling coming in his heart. So that quality of humility is not something imitated, not something to be exhibited. Jai Shri Gaurataai ki jai. Radhas Bihari ji Rata Vishakha ji ki jai. Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ji ki jai. It automatically manifests as natural course of one's behavior. It is not artificial. So therefore King Prithu was glorified previously by showing his quality of humility in the previous chapter, that he is saying that don't embarrass me. Don't say all these things. I'm not even accomplished anything. I'm just born. This is not very nice. He's exhibiting the quality of honesty and humility. But he is like Anala. Like a fire. These two appear to be contradictory. How can be one so powerful that people are afraid to approach him, at the same time have the quality of humility? But there is no contradiction. I'll tell, first of all, since it's incarnation of Krishna, Krishna is full of contradictions. And his contradictions, they become very sweet. In him, they resolve him, they reconcile in him in a very wonderful way. Like Rupa Goswami describes Krishna's nayakatvam, Krishna's heroism of different shades, or different varieties. We'll not go into detail, but he says first varieties he gives. Dhira Udatta, Dhira Shanta, Dhira Lalita and Dhira Uddata. I don't exactly remember the English translation of those words. Dhira Udatta means somebody who is very deep personality, very gambhir, means very deep and serious person. Who is aprakat mana, who is honorable, but his honor is not readily exhibited, like Lord Ramachandra. He is vinayi, he is humble, but he has got his self-respect. It is called Dhira Udatta. And a prime example of Dhira Udatta is Lord Ramachandra, Rupa Goswami says. He is a typical example of a hero who is a Dhira Udatta hero. Dhira Udatta type of a hero. Then there is Dhira Uddata, arrogant, insulting, ill-treating others. This is another kind of a hero. Bhimsen, second brother among Pandavas, he is known as Dhira Uddata. Completely opposite of Dhira Udatta. Then Dhira Shanta. Dhira Shanta means somebody who is very sayami, self-controlled, Mitabhashi speaks less. Maharaj Yudhishthira is considered to be a prime example of Dhira Shanta. And Dhira Lalita, absolutely uncontrolled, who is very talkative, very attached to the opposite sex. So Madana, Cupid, is considered to be example of Dhira Lalita. So this, we can see Dhira Shanta and Dhira Lalita are exactly opposite of each other. Dhira Udatta and Dhira Uddata, these are completely contradictory of each other. But Rupa Goswami says Krishna is all these four at the same time. Dhira Udatta, Dhira Shanta, Dhira Uddata, Dhira Lalita at the same time. And because he is Krishna, these contradictions, which are very obvious and logical mind cannot reconcile, in his personality, they reconcile in a very beautiful way. And that those contradictions, instead of becoming cause of trouble, anxiety, disturbance and distress, they become cause of pleasure, they become cause of happiness, appreciation. So Maharaj Prithu is expansion of Krishna, so he had this humility as exhibited in the previous verses. At the same time, he also has quality of Anila, Agni, fire. He is humble, at the same time he is so powerful and so fiery that his enemies cannot approach him. This is one way of resolving this. Apart from that, humility does not mean lack of self-respect or lack of fiery nature. There are many examples. If you read Lochandas Thakur's writings, Lochan bole shei papi elo ar gelo. You know, he's talking of, he's criticizing materialistic people, he's criticizing some so-called devotees in a very harsh language. Even Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that sometime a devotee, all his 26 qualities, while commenting on them, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna eka sharanam, full surrender to Krishna is the essential quality. What is it called in Sanskrit? I forgot the words. Anybody remembers? Something which is essential nature and something is not essential but it is a part of it. Swarupa Lakshan and Tatastha Lakshan. Swarupa is essential nature. So this 26 qualities, while commenting on that, he says that Krishnaika Sharan, one-minded surrender to Krishna, uninterrupted, that is Swarupa Lakshan of a devotee. And all others are Tatastha. Other qualities are Tatastha Lakshan. So sometime he says, while commenting on this, some devotee of Uddhata nature, of a nature of arrogant nature, he says sometime he may speak words or act which may not necessarily show the quality of humility, obviously. But that does not mean he is not a devotee, or he is not a devotee of higher level, Madhurya Kadambini. Sometimes these qualities may not manifest in him, or may not manifest to the eyes of a pursuer. It is also, in some time, the quality of anger gets manifest. That doesn't take away the quality of humility. We see when there is Siddhanta Virod, when there is even Mahaprabhu or his close associates, they manifest this quality of chastising or being harsh sometimes. Before anything brought to Mahaprabhu's notice, many people used to write different poems or theses or write-ups for his pleasure and would bring it to him. But if they had two defects, Siddhanta Virod and Rasabhas. Siddhanta Virod means conclusions opposed to the Siddhanta of Bhakti. And Rasabhas, Rasabhas means inappropriate mixture of mellows. Bhakti, devotee, devotional service is a rasa, it's a mellow. It's something to be relished. It's a mixture of vibhav, anubhav, vyabhichari, sanchari bhav, and sthai bhav. These are the five different mellows which mix to give a taste or relishment of bhakti. But if they are improperly mixed, then it creates a bitter taste. You know, just like when you cook, if you don't mix ingredients, all of them are very nice ingredients, if you don't mix them properly, it may not create a nice, relishable taste. Similarly, in bhakti also, if these rasas are not properly mixed, they don't give very sweet taste. So Mahaprabhu, if you hear something which had these two defects, it will greatly perturb him, greatly disturb him or distress him. Chandidas, Vidyapati, Rayala Natakagiti, Karnamruta, Shrikita Govinda, স্বরূপ রামানন্দ শোনে, মহাপ্রভু রাত্রি দিনে শুনে গায় পরম আনন্দ গম্ভীরা। মহাপ্রভু চণ্ডীদাস বিদ্যাপতি রামানন্দ রায় জগন্নাথ বল্লভ নাটক, কর্ণামৃত কৃষ্ণ কর্ণামৃত অফ বিলোমঙ্গল ঠাকুর অ্যান্ড গীত গোবিন্দ অফ শ্রী জয়দেব, দিজ আর দ্য ফাইভ মোস্ট ফেভারিট ওয়ার্কস অফ শ্রী চৈতন্য। সো ইউড হিয়ার ডে অ্যান্ড নাইট স্বরূপ রামানন্দ শোনে, মহাপ্রভু রাত্রি দিনে শুনে গায় পরম আনন্দ উইথ রামানন্দ রায় অ্যান্ড স্বরূপ দামোদর, ইউড হিয়ার দিস ফাইভ ওয়ার্কস ডে অ্যান্ড নাইট অ্যান্ড রিলিশ। So many times people would also write something and wanted Mahaprabhu to hear it. So many times those writings would contain these defects and that would make Mahaprabhu very distressed or angry. So Rama Swarup Damodar used to check whether these two defects are there or not. And sometimes he would chastise the person who would write that this is not the way you can write, should write. And only if it is passed to the hands of Swarup Damodar, then only Mahaprabhu would hear this. Because such writings, the Siddhanta Virodh, would make Mahaprabhu angry or distressed. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, he is known as Simha Guru, he was like a lion, like a fire. Whenever he would hear anything written or anything promoted against the Siddhanta conclusion of Rupa Goswami, he would manifest this quality of anger. It does not mean he had no humility. He would challenge scholars, atheists or different apasampradayas in a very head-on way, calling them all kinds of names. Like for example, there were Vaishnavas who believed that the parampara goes through the family succession. Son, father, son, grandson, like that. So he would call them Shukra parampara. Shukra means semen, you know, parampara coming through semen. This is how we are Shrotra Parampara. He said, our Parampara comes hearing Shastra. And these are Shukra Parampara, which comes through, you know, like that. He would use such a harsh words against supposedly Vaishnavas, who were, you know, it was not that many of them were even following principles, not that all of them were Sajiyas. But he could not accept or appreciate that Bhagavad Parampara must be coming from, you know, Shrotra, hearing. Or sometimes people would promote humanitarian or charitable activities in name of Vaishnavism, you know, and he would be very angry and upset. He has written in his Harmonist somewhere, in the first or second issue, that Harinam, even with all offenses, is superior to building thousands of hospitals. This is Siddhanta of Rupa and Sanatan. And he wrote in a time when there was whole, I think famine was there in Orissa, and huge outcry came against him because of this. But he fought back. He manifested the quality. But at the same time, you cannot say that he was an angry, arrogant person. Many people said that. He had humility. He went to whom? To one most uneducated person, like Gokishar Babaji Maharaj, and fell at his feet to accept him as a disciple. He did not care for education, he didn't care for mundane education, although he himself was such a scholar, son of a magistrate. So this quality showed that he had such a great humility and he had no respect for any education or any great learning, although he himself was a learned scholar. So similarly, this kind of activities may seem in the body of a Vaishnava or Krishna, but they are not hypocritical activities or they are not contradictory activities. Tukaram had said, Menauni mahu ame vishnudasa prasangi hu vajrauna kathina. That although Vishnudas, Vaishnava, is softer than wax, but when situation comes, it will become hard, like vajra. Vajra una kathina, harder than vajra, harder than thunderbolt. So Maharaj Prithu, Shaktavesh Avatar and greatest Vaishnava, had manifested that although he was in the beginning, before they started, he explained that please don't praise me. He was feeling embarrassed. Quality of his intelligence, honesty and humility. And when he's praised, his quality is that he's being as powerful as fire. Just like fire, nobody wants to approach a fire. If you approach a fire, you may get burned. As a king, you should be powerful. As a king, he manifests that quality. He was going to manifest, although the professional reciters are saying and probably talking about his future activities. He had that quality where his opponents, even Mother Earth was afraid of him, as we see, afraid to approach him. This is what this shloka is glorifying, that particular quality of Lord Maharaj Prithu. I stop here. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. If anybody has any comments or question, I'll read the verse again.
Durasado durvishah asannopi vidurvat naivabhi bhavitum shakyo venaranyutitho nalaha. King Prithu was born of the dead body of King Vena, as fire is produced from arani wood. Thus King Prithu will always remain just like fire, and his enemies will not be able to approach him. Indeed, he will be unbearable to his enemies. For although staying very near him, they will never be able to approach him, but will have to remain as if far away. No one will be able to overcome the strength of King Prithu. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhu, very nice class. I've never read this or heard it, but I just started thinking about apasadantic conclusions. The ones that I'm aware of all go against Rupa Goswami's definition of Uttama Bhakti. There's always a defect in that area. Even like, for instance, Ritvik philosophy, Anushilanam means following in the footsteps of the previous Acharya, and as Prabhupada says in the Nectar Devotion, under the direction of the spiritual master. So I'm wondering if you are aware, I mean, you've dealt with a lot of apasampradayic conclusions over the years, and if that's also the conclusion of the Acharyas, that apasampradaya can be weighed against anyabhilashita sunyam.
Anyabhilashita shunyam, I can comment on this. Anyabhilashita shunyam is the definition of uttam bhakti. Bhakti uttama. If there is anyabhilash, anyabhilash means having no other desire other than serving Krishna, other than satisfying Krishna. If somebody has other desires and he is serving Krishna, that is bhakti. It does not make it apasampradaya bhakti. Bhakti means trying to please Krishna. Krishna Anushiranam iti bhakti. Anushiranam means yes, following. Following scriptures, following previous acharyas, following sadhus, following guru. So as long as one acts to please Krishna, that is bhakti. But when that bhakti, that activities are tinged with anyabhilash, other desires, apart from pleasing Krishna, this desire to please one's own senses, one's own mind, one's own false ego, pujala pratishtha, then that bhakti becomes contaminated or becomes compromised. Or second qualification Rupa Goswami gives, or disqualification rather, jnana karma janavruttam, that if
which activity of bhakti is covered by activities of jnana and karma. There could be jnana and karma, but that it should not cover the act of bhakti. Then it will become uttam bhakti. So one may perform bhakti, one may have still some other desires, and one may still have faith in jnana and karma. That will cover bhakti. It will not manifest bhakti's full potency. And one may not get desired results quickly, but it is still bhakti. Apasampradayic conclusion means one performs bhakti, but his performance is not necessarily in agreement with even Mishra Bhakti definition. The example is given, for example, that there are 13 Apasampradayas listed. So some of them believe that there is no need to study Shastra. Even Bhakti Shastras. Or some people believe that there is no need to control senses. There can be a relationship, illicit relationship, which is they consider to be something which helps them advance. Because at a conclusion, Rupa Goswami says that bhava bhakti, ultimate goal of bhakti, we perform sadhana bhakti to achieve bhava. What is bhava bhakti? Rupa Goswami defines bhava bhakti as what is that? What is anybody knows definition of bhava bhakti? Masrunnata is one of the words, I forgot.
First
law of God, but he says it softens the heart. Ruchibhi chitra masrunnyo kudasav bhav uchyate. This is the second line of the verse, first line I forget. Ruchibhi chitra masrunnyo kudasav bhav uchyate. Bhava bhakti is that, the second line says, when the ruchi, taste for Krishna's name, makes one's heart softer, like a butter. Ruchibhi chitra masrunnyo kudasav bhav. Shuddhasattva visheshatma prema suryamshu samya bhag ruchibhi chitta masrunyo kudaso bhav uchyate. Shuddhasattva visheshatma, when one is established in a platform of Shuddhasattva, prema suryamshu samya bhag, and it is like Aruna, when before the sun comes you see the ray of Aruna, the pinkish reddish rays come. Similarly, before prema, sun of prema arises, the Aruna of Bhakti comes, Rupa Goswami says. But then he says, Ruchibhi chitra masrunyo, and when the heart becomes soft like a butter, because of taste for Krishna, that is known as Bhava Bhakti. So one Sergius group says that the austerities and study of Shastra, taking vows of Vaidhi Bhakti, they make one heart becomes very hard. And such a hard is not good for manifestation of bhava. You cannot get bhava. So they believe in having very soft heart. So that soft heart means no austerity, no sense control, a basic sentimentalism. And they promote that as bhakti. They say, yes, you chant Krishna's name, you hear 10 canto of Bhagavatam, don't talk about renunciation of Rushabdev, or don't read that part. You read about Krishna's pastimes with gopis, which is very relishable and softens the heart. Don't read hardening part of Bhagavatam or Jada Bharat's detachment, walking like a madman. That's not this part. Because if your heart is hard, then bhava cannot, and then you can see this thing. Sometime you go in, I don't know, of late, but many times we go on Navadvip Howrah line, these babas will come with one and they will be singing and crying, and sometimes they say, oh, what to do, bhava is not coming. So that performing kind of bhakti, sometimes they sing Narottam Das Thakur song, they sing songs of Narottam Das Thakur and others, even Chandidas, Vidyapati, which even Mahaprabhu relish. They cannot say singing those songs is not bhakti, because Mahaprabhu himself relished them. But the Siddhanta is wrong. The Siddhanta is that they chant Hare Krishna also. It's not that they don't chant Hare Krishna. that you should perform this in a sentimental way. So it's become, so there Rupa Goswami says, sometimes they even cry also. Profusely tears come out of their eyes. It's Ratyabhas. It is a reflection of Bhava, it is not real Bhava. It is Pratibimba and Chaya. Rupa Goswami says it can be either reflection or shadow of Bhava. And some of them may even be vegetarian or maybe even performing certain level of. But a Siddhanta is not founded in Bhagavatam. So they may perform and they may want to please Krishna also with other desires. So their performance could be Mishra Bhakti. But the Siddhanta is not correct. The Siddhanta is not to achieve, you know, perfect Krishna Prem, which means devoid of any material attachment. The Siddhanta is to have relationship with opposite sex in order to relish and understand, you know, Krishna's, they think by doing this they'll understand Krishna, understand Radha and Krishna Lila. So which goes against Rupa Goswami's teaching. Yes, they chant Hare Krishna, they may be vegetarian, but ultimately if you want to understand past tense of Radha and Krishna, you must be free from sex desire. And by freeing from sex desire, one's heart will not become hard, it will become soft. Some of them criticize Rupa Goswami as a mundane scholar who is writing so many books and so many regulations instead of appreciating. And so this is the point, is that this is Upa Siddhanta. It may not necessarily go against the performance of bhakti in terms of what Rupa Goswami's definition goes. They may even chant Hare Krishna. But even if you chant Hare Krishna with Nama Parat, still it is good. It is not. It is better than building hospitals, hundreds of hospitals, according to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He compared that as superior to building, doing so many mundane charities. So but the Siddhanta is wrong. Ultimately we chant Hare Krishna to get rid of all material attachments, all material sense gratification, a desire to be comfortable. We understand this is all has to go, has to fall. We may have to have it because of our conditioning, our attachments, our shortcomings. We don't say by having a peaceful, comfortable, enjoyable life we can become Krishna conscious. No, it may be our conditioning, our need, our subtle desires to enjoy. But we understand this is not what it is. Ultimately this all has to go. One has to become completely detached from all this external sense gratification, external comforts, and internal sense gratification like puja, la, pratishtha. And one mind has to be completely only absorbed in Krishna to the exclusion of everything else in this world. Then only we'll be able to relish Bhava Bhakti and Prem Bhakti. This conclusion we understand. We may not be able to practice, we may not be able to exhibit it, but we know that's the goal. So our practice and Sahaja's practice may look correct, but since the goal, the thing is to enjoy opposite sex company, and by doing this you will probably relish such conclusions, which is what one of the famous proponent was Rupa Kaviraj of 17th century, made even person like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur or Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur angry. And they treated such persons with harsh words, such conclusions with harsh words. They exhibited anger. I don't know, that's for the question probably you are. So you have to, I think my understanding, you have to discriminate between what one performs. And if one is sincere, because Krishna is very merciful, he may remove those conclusions from the heart. Krishna kahe ama bhaje mage indriya sukh, amrut chhadi vishwa mange eto bodo murkh, ame vigya ehi murkhe vishwa keno dibo, nija charana mruta diya vishay bhulaibo. Kaviraj Goswami says, Krishna says, this man is so foolish. He is worshipping me, but is asking for sense gratification. He does not want the nectar of bhakti. He is asking for the poison of sense gratification. But then Krishna says, I am vigya, I am not a fool, I am intelligent, I know what is good for him. Why should I give such a foolish person sense gratification, material opulence? I will give him pleasure, I will give him nectar of my charanamrut, nectar of my lotus feet. By getting that, he will forget sense gratification, objects of sense gratification, and surrender to me. So sometimes if somebody has even wrong conclusions, somebody has some wrong desires, as long as his desire to please Krishna is there, and his sincerity in that desire, Krishna would take away such desires from the heart. This is what Kaviraj Goswami says, and he'll give such a person relishment of his nectarian lotus feet. So he'll forget everything. Just like Mahaprabhu, is the last part of his pastimes, complete forgetful of the external world, absorbed in uninterrupted discussions, thoughts, talks about Krishna. I hope I addressed your point.
Hare Krishna.
We have how much? 10 more minutes?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like nowadays, ISKCON also is building hospitals and getting into distribution of food among children and all that. So do they come under devotion service or mundane activities?
Well, it's a controversial topic. I can give my opinion. It may not be, you know, you should not take it as opinion of Bhagavatam. I can give you my opinion, and you should not take it as opinion of Bhagavat. Per se, no. But if hospitals are built to serve Vaishnavas, you can dovetail it. Idea is to help Vaishnavas in their devotional service. So it could be dovetailed, like what Rupa Goswami says, or Jiva Goswami says, Aropa Siddha Bhakti. One can impose bhakti on such acts. Bhakti activities are three varieties, Jiva Goswami says. Aropa Siddha, Sangha Siddha, and Swarupa Siddha. Swarupa Siddha Bhakti means, Swarupa Siddha means the nature of bhakti, like chanting Harinam, reading Bhagavatam, hearing, worshipping deities, doing Nam Sankirtan. This is Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. There is no replacement for these activities. Nothing in the world can replace this. But certain activities which are not directly bhakti, which can become bhakti by its association, it is called Sangha Siddha Bhakti. Just like taking bath. We take bath before we come to temple to attend Mangala Arati. Now taking bath in itself is not bhakti. But because we are taking bath to come to temple, enter temple room, to take darshan of Radharas Bihariji, and to chant, do Nam Sankirtan in front of the deities, it becomes bhakti. So it is called Sangha Siddha Bhakti. The act which is not bhakti became bhakti by association of bhakti. There is Aropa Siddha Bhakti. So activities which we may do, which are karmic activities. Just like we go and work outside to do business to earn money. This is not bhakti. Doing business is not bhakti. But the fruits are given to Krishna. Say 50% of the profit is given. Or the money is earned to maintain family so that family can practice Krishna consciousness. So although doing a job or doing business or earning money is not bhakti in itself. If you dovetail those acts, it can be considered bhakti, but it is Aropa Siddha. You are imposing bhakti on those activities. So Sangha Siddha and Aropa Siddha Bhakti can never be equated with Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Because they are not bhakti in nature. They become bhakti because of either association or by imposition. So if somebody builds an hospital or does some charity activities to help Vaishnavas, it can be considered, in my opinion, Aropa Siddha Bhakti. It is not Swarupa Siddha Bhakti. Secondly, there is a debate that sometime for ISKCON's survival institution to get some goodwill, political mileage, we may need to do certain acts. Like for example, as an institution, we have to go to income tax and file our returns. We have to get ATG exemption to raise funds. This is not bhakti. We have to go to courts to file, fight legal battles. This becomes necessary for existence, survival and continuation of an institution. Is registering an institution of bhakti? Prabhupada is registered himself, is gone. So we can say yes, Aropa Siddha, because with institution you can propagate Mahaprabhu's philosophy, you can propagate Nam Sankirtan. But there is no institution, propagation can go on, but it will not be very effective, it will not be very organized. Now, there is an argument given by one camp. So for the institution to have honorable position in society, to be appreciated, recognized, supported by political leaders, doing the mundane acts like feeding students midday meal or doing hospital is necessary and good. There are a group of devotees who are completely against it. They think it is distraction. Prabhupada never did this. So whatever Prabhupada did, apart from chanting and hearing, we could probably do that, but what he did not do directly, we should not do. That's one argument. Another argument given is that it may mislead us, or it may, this is Jayadas Maharaja's very famous argument. He says that just like Salvation Army in America, they began in 19th century whenever, as Salvation Army, means to get salvation, go to heaven. They are great followers of Bible. But over a period of time, they started collecting rejected clothes and household items from American middle class people to help use it in helping the poor Americans. Now Salvation Army has become synonymous with those people who come to collect rejected clothes from your house. If you are interested in knowing about God or Jesus Christ or going to heaven, you don't think of Salvation Army. If you have some clothes to be rejected, thrown out, then you think of Salvation Army. So the argument is that if ISKCON takes this direction, and since charitable activities like distribution of food or hospital is very easy to gain respect, honor, every leader name is worth will come and wants to be photographed when he serves prasadam to the children or when hospital is inaugurated. And since we are also conditioned souls, we also get carried away with name, fame, glory and appreciation. So all of us will also get carried away with these activities which bring us easy money, easy name, fame, appreciation, respect. And we'll forget the main goal for which Prabhupada established ISKCON, not to get this name, fame, glory. This is all has to be there to propagate holy names of Krishna, to make everybody chant Krishna's name, to make everybody give up sinful activities, to make everybody a first-class Vaishnava. We'll forget that, and our society will become a society known for taking care of children, taking care of old people. We'll get a lot of honor, respect, funds. People will speak good of us, but we will deviate from the main goal for which the Prabhupada established ISKCON. These are the parts of arguments.
Like sometimes it could be prayasa, means too much endeavor, distributing meals and...
Prayasa, if it is ati prayasa, if that becomes the goal, then we have lost it. We also became, instead of using these activities in service of Krishna, we are using bhakti in service of these activities. So we are imposing, we're making aropa siddha charity, we are putting aropa of charity on bhakti instead of imposing bhakti on charity. So it's a very delicate and dangerous situation, which I tend to agree that we have to be very, very careful. Although there is good side in doing charitable activities, if as long as there is proper understanding and guaranteed maintenance of that understanding throughout the history of ISKCON.
Actually, Srila Prabhupada said that don't worry about public opinion. We depend on Krishna.
But also Prabhupada entertained, or you know, great political leaders. He went out of his way to, you know, praise them and get their support. There are a lot of quotes to that also. You know, we have to be fair. We can't just take one quote and say this is it. But for sure, Prabhupada did not establish any hospital, didn't establish any. He said that with prasadam distribution, there should be Harinam Sankirtan. There is no such activities except for probably Mayapur and Vrindavan, where there is Holy Dham, where everybody could be served. Outside of it, I personally, this is my opinion, will be very hard pressed to justify such activities on Prabhupada's courts. I feel this is my reading of Srila Prabhupada. But as I said, at the same time, we can see also that there is a need for ISKCON's furtherance. If we are very, very, in my opinion, very, very conscious that this is a very good chance of misleading or deviating us, and keep it completely separate and do it only to promote Harinam Sankirtan and not in itself to get name, fame and glory, it may be helpful, but otherwise there is a great danger of deviation.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.
Now, you want to say something on this point?
I said this charitable activities which ISKCON is doing, it's like a knife. It depends on who is handling.
No, it's a knife, but the handler will change, no? Knife will remain. That's the problem. The next handler may not.
That is the whole
that's
thing.
The fear. The fear is, okay, now you understand, you all accept it. But will that be maintained in the future? Because Prabhupada established ISKCON not for our lifetime. It has to go on. This is his legacy. It shouldn't be misunderstood. And then people will say, oh, Prabhupada's followers did it, so this is what he must have wanted. And in the name of Prabhupada, this should be promoted. This is a fear.
That's why it is growing in such a mammoth way. Finally, it will be identified ISKCON as this, and then you unable to stop it.
What can I say? Actually, it has got both sides of arguments, and fear is this fear of, I think, Jayagurudeva Maharaj is very well founded, in my opinion. And we have to be very careful if you want to go ahead with this.
Of course, we are having good will temporarily, but we are identified more towards that.
More towards
you know, midday meal and hospital.
Well, that is because of Bangalore right now. Because
Bangalore or Delhi or Chopati, it's all same.
It started with that and it turned out to be a very good way of.
They criticize Bangalore, but they are all following same thing.
That's what Bhakti Vikas Swami says, that you are telling he is deviant, but you are making him acharya. Anyway, but we have to be careful because there are valid arguments on both sides. We should not. Yes, Prabhu.
There's one story that Giriraj Swami told. There were devotees in Melbourne building the wrath carts, and they were in a vacant lot next to a big building, and the big building caught on fire. It was like 6-7 stories high, and there were people screaming out the windows to be saved, because it was very rapidly spreading fire. So the devotees, they were just near the end of building the carts, and they were thinking, what should we do? You know, it's not really bhakti to get involved with saving Karmi's lives. But they did it anyway. And they took the canopies from the wrath carts and used them to catch people jumping out of the windows. And it made the headlines in the Melbourne, all over Australia it was headlines. So this was sent to Prabhupada, one of the headlines, and he immediately had 5 lakh copies made, and he distributed it all over Bombay. And the principle is lokavichar, that on the basis of public opinion, if people will become favorable to preaching, then it's not against bhakti. This is the, but then, you know, then there's other sides of the argument when it gets into this massive prasadam distribution. But my experience, having had surgery in the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, was that I felt like I had gone to a tirtha. There was so much sangha, and the atmosphere was just so surcharged with Krishna consciousness, that rather than being brought brought down by my bodily condition, I felt elevated by the Vaishnava Sangha. And Madhavananda Prabhu told me that there were many hospitals in Maharashtra that wanted to implement the patient care program that they have at the Bhaktivedanta Hospital, which is very Krishna conscious. It gets people, you know, taking shelter in Krishna consciousness. So,
any other opinion? We close. You have anything to say? We can. 9:15, I think. I have to stop. Last one. You want to say something? No. You want to say something?
Yes. See, a person is born. Imagine that I am a small kid. I'm just born a month after. And I've always heard people chanting Hare Rama, Hare Krishna. But I don't know who is this Lord Krishna. And what is this Lord Krishna? I want to know who is Lord Krishna.
Oh.
And why is Lord Krishna?
Okay, so I think we'll discuss after the class. Okay, you can talk to devotees. I thought you were talking on a topic. Tantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki. The Prabhupada ki. Hari Bol. Talk to him.
Yes,
thanks for the clarification for this last question. The question which was asked for the Guruji.